So what the Fed wanted to do, they wanted to keep the interest rate going lower and lower and lower. They wanted to say, buy more stuff. But the interest rate was already at zero. And they couldn't put the interest rate negative, because if you were gonna get a negative return on your dollar by putting it in the bank, you'd be like, well, I'm not gonna do that. Why would I pay you to keep my money? I'll just hold on to it. I'll just put it in my room.
Welcome to another extra slice of the pie. This is an expanded podcast series featuring conversations with University of Chicago scholars on cutting-edge research and key events of the day. The Pie is a production of the University of Chicago's Becker Friedman Institute. In this episode, we're hearing from Christina Patterson. She's an assistant professor at the Booth School of Business and a faculty research fellow at the National Bureau of Economic Research. Christina's research specializes in macroeconomics and labor economics. Just as a heads up, throughout the talk, you'll hear Christina referring to some slides she used in her Zoom presentation to a virtual audience. The audience here is the inaugural group of BFI's Expanding Diversity and Economics Summer Institute, or EDE. The purpose of the program is to identify and support early college students with a broad range of backgrounds who are interested in the field of economics. Here's Christina Patterson with a presentation on the effect of monetary policy shocks on the labor market.
So monetary policy. So what is monetary policy? Well, the economy, kind of in the macroeconomy, is characterized by booms and busts. We know this well because we're currently in one. And you can see here, this is just kind of a pictorial representation of the business cycle. And there's kind of a steady growth rate, hopefully, through kind of many advanced economies. And yet we often experience these kind of booms and peaks. So you can think of like the financial crisis in 2008, the pandemic certainly is another one. But certainly kind of ever since kind of the post-war period, there's been this kind of cycle of booms and busts. And so what is monetary policy? Well, it's one of the kind of key tools that our economy has to try to fight kind of these booms and busts and to stabilize these periods, these recessionary periods. And so monetary policy is one of the big ones. And another one, which I think you're kind of going to be learning about from some other people talking about, is kind of fiscal policy. So what kind of Congress does in terms of spending. But the central bank, and then the United States is the Federal Reserve Bank, conducts monetary policy. And they have, the Federal Reserve Bank has kind of the following mandates. They try to get maximum employment. And I'll talk for just a moment about what that means. They try to stabilize prices. And then they try to have kind of moderate long-term interest rates. And I'm going to talk about in a second about what those mean. Okay, so what is maximum employment? Well, there's no real definition of maximum employment. What I've plotted here on the left side is the unemployment rate in the United States. So what this is the fraction of people in the United States who say that they want a job, but currently don't have one. And so this is a kind of a pretty salient feature that you probably heard about quite a bit through the pandemic. People kind of lost their jobs. They wanted to find a new job. And they couldn't find one. And you can see here, this is, you know, what's in the news. There's this huge, huge, huge spike in the fraction of the labor force that want a job but can't find it. So who's not in the unemployment rate? Well, the unemployment rate's not about people who say are retired. Similarly, students, kind of most of you are probably out of the labor force. That means you're not kind of actively searching for employment, although you will be kind of when you graduate. So that's another group that's kind of out of the labor force. But this is kind of one of the key measures of kind of the health of the labor market. Again, you can see these booms and busts. This is the kind of 2008 crisis, but it kind of has this cyclical pattern over time. And so once kind of maximum employment, well, a lot of the unemployment in the economy is kind of outside of the control of the central bank. So what the central bank does is it tries to stabilize these booms and busts. But you can see here, this plot never goes to zero, never goes even close to zero, because there's always, you know, some churn that goes on in the labor market. So there are people who left their job and then they have, you know, a 1 or 2 month period while they're looking for a new one and then they find a new job. So that's kind of some amount of unemployment is kind of just inherent in the labor market. As people say, graduate college, and then they wait a couple months and then they find a job sort of thing. And so there's no explicit estimate of kind of what the central bank considers to be kind of maximum employment, i.e. everyone who wants, like, what are we going to target? If we want everyone who wants a job to have one, what number of the unemployment rate does that look like? But in general, the kind of estimates are somewhere ranging from about around 5%, with the median estimate kind of just around there. So that's kind of what the Fed thinks about when they're targeting, kind of thinking of maximum employment. So the second thing is, what about stable prices? So what are stable prices? Well, what I've plotted here is the rate of inflation. So that's the kind of rate of change of prices in the economy. The rate of inflation is, like, currently a really big topic that people have been talking about kind of coming out of the pandemic. But what I put here is kind of the unemployment rate. And you can see that for the past, say, 30 years, we've had a very, very steady rate of inflation. So the rate at which prices in the economy are going up. And when I say prices in the economy, well, obviously there's no one price. There's a price on lots of things. And so the way that they measure this is, the gist is that they take a basket of goods that people buy. So they buy milk, they buy cars, they buy rent, and they rent on their house, and they buy, you know, apples. And they say, okay, for that set of goods, what is the price that of those goods over time? And if the price of those goods is kind of growing, say at something like 2% a year. And so the Fed actually targets an inflation rate of about 2%. So one question is kind of, why keep prices stable overall? Why does the Fed even care about inflation? Well, there are potentially a lot of reasons, but one is basically, so you can think about, if household savings aren't eroded. So if there were a really high rate of inflation, like here, many of us were not alive at this point in time, but there was something close to over a 10% rate of inflation going on here. And so that meant that if you put a dollar in the bank, the number of goods you could buy for that dollar was about 10% lower if you just kind of left it sitting kind of under the mattress without anything. And so this rate of inflation can kind of dramatically erode household savings, and kind of very much affect whether you say, if you're facing a really high inflation rate, you might say, well, I'm not going to save that dollar because I can, or, you know, that, you know, $10,000, I can buy a car now, and then maybe I can sell the car later at whatever, you know, rate people are willing to buy the car. But if I take that $10,000 and I put it under my mattress and I wait a year, well, now I can't afford the car because the price of the car has gone up. And that's kind of what inflation is capturing. So then the other question is, okay, well, then why have any inflation? Wouldn't it make a lot more sense if prices were just stable? And then I could decide when I wanted to buy the car and I had the money and I didn't have to worry about any of this. And again, it's quite a complicated set of discussions, but in general, the Fed has decided to have some positive amount of inflation for, I would say, kind of two reasons. So the first is, they want to avoid deflationary cycles. So inflation is, prices are going up. What's deflation? Well, prices are going down. And so why are prices going down over time? Why is that a potentially really challenging thing for an economy? Well, imagine I'm sitting here today and I have my money and I'm going to buy my used car. If I expect it to be cheaper next year than it is today, I'm going to say, well, maybe I don't really need the car. I'm just going to wait. And I'm going to wait until next year to buy the car. And then the next year comes and I'm like, well, it's going to be even cheaper in the future. And so people are going to choose to delay the purchase of a lot of items that they don't kind of like very immediately need. And that's going to mean that kind of overall spending in the economy can grind to a halt because everyone's kind of waiting for when the prices are going to be going down in the future. And so those can be really, really costly from a business cycle perspective. And then they also want to kind of keep the real rate of interest a little bit higher. And I'll talk about what this means in just a moment. But like I said, kind of the real rate of return is, if I save money and I put it in a bank account, kind of how much can I buy from that in the future? And so if there's some amount of inflation, you have a little bit more room to run with nominal interest rates. But I'll get back to that in a second. Okay, so let's talk about what the Fed does. So of course, they don't actually control unemployment. nor do they control prices. So if you are someone who's hiring on the market, the Fed kind of has no direct control over who you're hiring and when you're hiring and how many people you hire and what you, how much you sell your milk for. But what they do control is something called the federal funds rate. And so the federal funds rate is kind of the primary tool of kind of conventional monetary policy in the United States. And many other countries do something quite similar with kind of a different nomenclature. And so what is this? Well, it's the interest rate for overnight borrowing between banks. And you should think of it as a very kind of short-term interest rate. So just to kind of fill in that detail quickly for those who are interested, what does it mean to be the borrowing rate between banks? Well, what banks have to do is they have to leave money with the Federal Reserve Bank in, it's called a reserve. You should think of it basically as cash that this, the bank has to hold. And the reason they have to hold that is because if you all go and you say, I want to get my $100 from the bank has to have enough money so that they can give you the $100 when you go and you ask for it. And so sometimes banks get to the end of their day and they say, uh-oh, I don't have enough cash sitting in my bank, in my account with the Federal Reserve. I don't have enough cash sitting in my bank. And what they have to do at that point is they have to go to another bank who might have extra cash and they say, hey, can I borrow some of your cash until tomorrow? Because tomorrow, somebody I lent money to is going to come back, they're going to pay me back, and I can give you back your cash. And so there's this, in the other bank says, sure, I'll give you that cash. But there's some chance that that bank's not going to, that the lender who you lent the money to is not coming back with your money. And that bank's not going to be able to pay back. And so the other bank's going to lend the first bank their money, but they're going to say at some interest rate, they're going to say, sure, I'll lend you, you know, $100, but tomorrow you got to pay me back $101. And there's that interest rate, which is kind of between banks. And that's the interest rate that the Federal Reserve Bank controls. And so what I've plotted here is the plot of the federal funds rate. The reason that those are kind of details for those who may be interested, but it's not that important actually. What's important is that you should think of this as the short-term interest rate. If you go and you take out a loan for, you know, a month, or you take out a loan for a short period of time, this is essentially going to determine the rate of interest that you are going to be paying on that loan. And in fact, it actually doesn't just determine the rate of interest that you're paying on your loan that's very short term. It also very much can dictate, you know, the rate of interest you're paying on your car loan or your mortgage or, you know, the kind of longer term rates of interest in the economy. And so we'll talk a little bit more about kind of what this looks like. But, you know, there's some things that are kind of noticeable here. So first of all, remember we talked about that period where there was that really high inflation. This was also a period where there were really high interest rates. So now we are the kind of, that looks very different from the world we're in now. So between 2008 and effectively until I think it was around 2018, we were at something called the zero lower bound, which meant the short-term interest rate was essentially zero. And we're actually there today again. We increased the interest rate for a little bit and then the pandemic hit and it kind of crushed back to zero. And we'll talk in just one moment about why the central bank did both of these things. And we can talk a little bit more about what it means to be at the kind of zero lower bound. And this essentially means, you guys probably know this, if you have kind of a checking, a kind of a savings account with your bank and you go to the bank, you do not get a ton of interest on that savings account. I mean, you get like pennies. And that's because this rate of interest is incredibly low. So why does the Fed care about the interest rate? So I said here, let's just talk for a second as we talk through kind of mechanisms of why the Fed cares about the interest rate. Let's consider this episode right here. So this is the time, it was the 2008 crisis and the central bank dramatically dropped the interest rate. So why did they do that? So imagine you're the policymaker, you're Ben Bernanke, you were head of the Fed in 2008, and there was a crash. And you were looking out and people were saying things were going south and you said, I'm gonna lower the federal funds rate. So why would you do that? Why does that kind of what the Fed kind of very dramatically dropped rates? Well, a lower federal fund rate is going to mean that banks are going to want to lend more. So why is that? Well, when they hold cash, they get to lend it out to other banks if they have extra cash. And if the return that they're getting on that cash from the interest rate is pretty low, they're going to say, well, I don't want to hold all this extra cash sitting in my account with the Fed. I'm going to lend it out. Because when I lend out the money, other people pay it back with interest. So that's profitable for me. And so what happens is the banks start making additional loans that lowers the interest rate that they are charging on their loans because they want to make more of them. So they want to make it more attractive to consumers and firms to kind of take out their loans. Okay, so now the Fed's dropped their federal funds rate. Banks are like, want to lend to other people. They say, hey, I'm going to give you a loan at a lower rate. And so then what happens? Well, consumers are going to want to spend more. So why does a lower interest rate mean that consumers want to spend more? In the jargon of economics, this would say it's kind of stimulating demand in the economy. Well, think about it. If you're like, there's a really low interest rate, think, hey, now's a good time to take out a mortgage. I'm going to, that rates are really low and I'm going to kind of buy a house. Or you are someone who already has a mortgage, you already have a house and the interest rate drops and you think, great, actually I can refinance my home. That means that I can kind of redo my mortgage so that I'm paying a lower interest rate. And that's going to mean my monthly payments go down because when I pay off my mortgage, I pay my principal and then I also pay my interest. And my interest payment went down because I refinanced my mortgage because the interest rate was lower. And now I was paying $900 a month with my, you know, principal plus interest. And now maybe I'm only paying $850 or $800 a month. So I now have an extra $100. Because I'm not paying it on my mortgage. And so I'm going to go and spend that money and I'm going to go and, you know, get my hair cut, or I'm going to go and go out to dinner or something like that. There's also, you know, in general, there's kind of the question of if the interest rate is low, it means that, well, I could save my money and I could wait until tomorrow to buy the car, or I could wait, but the interest rate's really low. So I'm not going to, it's not like if I save today, I'm going to make money and then tomorrow I'm going to be able to buy a better car. And so if the interest rate's really low, like I might as well just buy it today. It's kind of the way some people would think about it. So there's this, again, in the jargon of economics, people would kind of intertemporally substitute. And so if the interest rate is high, I think, okay, well, if I save my money and I going to get, you know, I put my dollar in, I'm going to get $1.10 tomorrow and there's not going to be much inflation. So I'm going to be able to buy kind of 10% more car. If I wait between today and tomorrow, I might as well wait and buy, you know, a nicer car or, you know, buy the same car plus, you know, a, you know, trip to New York or something. Whereas if the interest rate's really low, you think, well, I'm not going to get that much more if I spend tomorrow versus today. So I might as well just buy the car today. And then the same thing happens for businesses. They're also looking at this. They're seeing that the kind of loans are cheap and therefore great. Now's a good time to kind of open a new store or buy a new machine or take out a business loan and start a small business or whatever. So those are all the sorts of channels through which kind of when there's a lower interest rate, firms and consumers are going to spend more. All right. So now we have lower interest rate, banks are making more loans, consumers are taking more loans, they're spending more. And then what happens? Well, workers, there's more demand in the economy. And so workers, people are going out and they have their money and they're saying, well, I'd like to buy more cars. And then there's an increase of demand for cars and the car manufacturers then have to make more cars. And when car manufacturers have to make more cars, well, they have to hire more workers to make more cars. And as they hire more workers, they have to pay more to those workers because they're hiring more people. And then those workers now have more income because you're kind of increased the amount of income they're getting. And then those workers are going to take their income and they are also going to buy more cars, or they're going to go get their haircut, or they're going to buy a new washing machine. And all of that's going to kind of stimulate additional demand. And that's how we get this kind of increase in employment that comes through from the kind of low drop in the interest rate. So that was the idea behind what the Fed was trying to do. So you can see here on this plot we had in the previous page, there was a big drop in the interest rate in 2008. They were saying, uh-oh, people are stopping, they're not buying cars. They're not going out. We're worried that people are going to get scared. They're going to say, ooh, now's not a good time to buy a house. It's not a good time to buy my new washing machine. I'm going to wait. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm worried I might lose my job. And the Fed lowers the interest rate and they try to change that decision and say, you know what, actually, maybe now is a good time. And they're trying to kind of stimulate that demand. Okay, so that was employment. So what's going on with inflation? How does the interest rate kind of affect inflation? Well, the effectiveness of kind of monetary policy in the short run and its effect on inflation kind of depends on what the flexibility of prices are. So I want you to think about, as we kind of talk through the mechanism here, I want you to think about a case where the economy is already booming and households and firms are demanding goods. So you might think of this as not all that unrelated to maybe some of the mechanisms that are going on today, although the economy is not quite booming, but there are some similarities here. So households and firms, their interest rate went down. They're like, great, now's a good time to buy. And they really want to buy, you know, cars. But firms might not be able to meet the demand at the current prices, because they just don't have enough cars, they can't produce them. And so what do they do to clear their market? Well, they raise their price because they don't have enough cars. And so they need to kind of equilibrate the supply and demand. And then the prices go up and that kind of starts to lead to inflation. Another way you kind of get this inflation mechanism is that workers, you get that firms, you know, go back to my car example, the car company says, got to make all these more cars. We got to hire workers. And the workers, there aren't many workers because everyone's employed. What about there aren't any workers? And so they say, well, then we have to pay them more. We have to either kind of attract them from other companies. They have to be willing to leave their job because I'm going to offer them better wages. Or they have to be somebody who said, well, I wasn't going to work because, you know, maybe there wasn't a job that was good enough to make it worthwhile for you to kind of pay for childcare, for example. But once you raise the wage and now it's a better job, now, okay, maybe I'm willing to take that job. And so what happens is the wages go up, and that's another form of inflation because now wages are going up, people are spending more, and you end up with this kind of increase in prices. And then I'm not going to talk about it today, but if you're kind of interested, we can chat a little bit more if there are questions. But inflation also occurs, and this is kind of something the central bank's really concerned about, when households and firms kind of expect prices to rise in the future. And so if you think about it, if you're signing a 5-year employment contract with a company, and you're kind of saying, okay, you're going to pay me, you know, X dollars an hour today and tomorrow, and next year and the year after. Well, if you think there's going to be a lot of inflation, so if you think prices are going to be going up a lot, you're going to write that into your contract. You're going to say, sure, I'll take, you know, $10 an hour today, but next year you got to pay me $11 an hour because I'm expecting that I'm going to need $11 an hour to keep buying the same set of things I'm already buying today. And the year after that, you're going to have to pay me $12 an hour because I think prices are going to go up. And if people expect inflation, they're going to write it into their contracts. And then guess what? They've written it into their contracts and inflation will happen because they've already put it in. And then the wages will go up. And so there's a lot kind of this link between what households expect and kind of what actually happens. I'm going to blow through these slides here quickly and just kind of have them here. As you saw in the federal funds rate chart at the beginning, the interest rate was at zero for a really long time. So this is called the zero lower bound. This is a problem, right? Because if you kind of remember the narrative of that time, this was a period of a pretty deep recession. So what the Fed wanted to do, they wanted to keep the interest rate going lower and lower and lower. They wanted to say, buy more stuff. But the interest rate was already at zero. And they couldn't put the interest rate negative because if you were going to get a negative return on your dollar by putting it in the bank, You'd be like, well, I'm not going to do that. Why would I pay you to keep my money? I'll just hold on to it. I'll just put it in my room. And so there's kind of this bound at the bottom. And so the Fed had to get creative about how else they could stimulate the economy during this period where the interest rates were kind of close to zero. And it's a super interesting question, and I'm happy to chat a little bit more, but they came up with a bunch of different ways to kind of stimulate the economy. Okay, so on to this question of, you know, so I just gave you the like bird's eye view of kind of what does monetary policy do? So this, you know, the ability of monetary policy to kind of affect the real economy. By real economy, I mean things that are not just prices. So can they affect employment? Can they affect output? So the number of kind of cars you make. It's been a longstanding debate in economics. And a lot of it kind of has to do, there's kind of, you can kind of crudely classify it as kind of two approaches. There's kind of a classical approach and a Keynesian approach. What I just described to you was the Keynesian approach a little bit more. And that's kind of one of the mechanisms. And they differ in terms of how quickly they think prices and wages are going to adjust to clear markets. And in the classical approach, basically the idea is that actually prices and wages are going to adjust really quickly. And so what happens, so the basic idea would be the Federal Reserve drops the interest rate. Great, consumers want to buy more stuff. And so they go out and they want to go buy a car. But now there's an increase in the demand for cars. And instead of just producing more cars, the price for cars are going to go up. And what's going to happen is it's going to kind of immediately undo the increase in demand, because then the price is going to go up and people are going to be like, oh gosh, cars are pretty expensive right now. I guess I won't buy a car. And that's going to kind of immediately stifle whatever change was stimulated by the fall in the interest rate. And so in this world, there's kind of a limited scope for government intervention in the economy and a little role for monetary policy. In the Keynesian approach, which is kind of what I had described as the kind of mechanism, prices and wages don't adjust as quickly. They kind of adjust in the long run. Eventually, you know, supply and demand are always going to kind of equal each other in that way. But kind of in the short run, the prices are kind of sticky. And so that's going to be the case where, you know, people want to buy cars. It's generally the case where there's kind of an excess, you know, the economy's not producing as many cars as it could. And so there's this capacity for companies to kind of produce more cars without raising the price too much. And so that's where kind of monetary policy can be very effective. And so I see one more hand here, but I'm just going to go through right through this slide, and then I'm going to come right back to you because I think this might help. So you say, great, you guys have been taking this class on quantitative methods. Well, why don't we go and study? Why is there a debate here? Let's go look at the data and let's see, like, what did monetary policy do? You just told me in 2008, the Fed dropped interest rates. Well, did it stimulate demand or did prices go up? Seems pretty easy, right? It turns out that actually empirically studying the effect of monetary policy is very, very, very hard. And the reason, there's kind of like two main reasons. So the first is that we only observe the world once. So that's always true. But we really only observe the economy once. And so I think you guys have been learning quite a bit about kind of other types of statistical analysis you can do, where of course you only observe the world once, but you observe people, lots of different people. And so it's, in some sense, it's like observing the world many times in different people. And so you can see, you know, if I did one thing to one person, but I didn't do that same thing to somebody else, I can compare the person I treated or the person I didn't, and I can say kind of what did they do. And I can kind of think of the first person who didn't get the treatment as, you know, telling me something about what would have happened to the other person had they not gotten that treatment, in the kind of the counterfactual. But the problem is that that's not true for the macro. There's only one economy. And so, you know, we can't kind of distinguish it. You can't kind of use all the traditional methods you guys have been learning about. And the second thing that's really hard is say, okay, so fine, you have one, you observed it once, but maybe that's enough. Maybe you just need that, you know, let's think of a time where the Fed kind of did something, you know, randomly changed the rate and then tell me what happened. But the problem is the Fed never does that. Monetary policy always happens for a reason. The Federal Reserve Bank employs hundreds of economists and, you know, policymakers and market analysts, and they do this, they do that, they spend, you know, and then the Fed decides to, you know, change the interest rate by, you know, 0.25. And what I've put here just to kind of illustrate that is a plot. So in the orange line, we have the federal funds rate. That's the what we were looking at before, kind of the interest rate for the central bank. And in blue, I have the unemployment rate, which we kind of looked at before. And you can see here that they're very negatively correlated. When one goes up, the other goes down. And so if you were kind of somewhat naive, you would say, oh, look, the Fed raises unemployment. When they lower the interest rate, unemployment goes up. And you would say, well, that's not what they meant to do, you know, and of course, that's because we have this kind of inference problem, which is that, well, the Fed lowered interest rates because unemployment was going up. And so what you need to tease out is kind of what additional effect on the unemployment rate did the kind of change in the interest rate have? And that's a very challenging thing. So I want to just kind of flip back for a moment. To say, okay, this is really hard to study. There's lots of approaches in the literature, and I'm happy to talk more if people are interested. But one of the ways people have done is they said, okay, let's consider a case study where, sure, we only observe the world once, but I'm gonna read about what happens and I'm gonna understand these movements in the interest rate were so big and so particular to the setting that I'm gonna say that, you know, what happened afterwards was the effect of monetary policy. And so one of the big kind of case studies that has, you know, I think actually convinced a lot of economists at the time that monetary policy actually was able to kind of have real effects on the economy was what we call kind of the Volcker disinflation here. So what was this? So this was the period of time that we talked about at the beginning where inflation was incredibly high. So it was like this red line here is inflation. So it was almost 15% up here. So the Fed under Volcker, who was then the chairman of the Fed, said, we have to break inflation. We have to get companies to, we have to break this kind of rise in prices. And so what they did was they raised the interest rate. So inflation was high. The interest rate was like almost 20% at periods. And what happened when the interest rate went up to almost 20% was unemployment, which is this green line here, it also went up to almost 20%. It was kind of one of the worst recessions since the Great Depression that happened kind of in the 1930s. And the Federal Reserve Bank said, we are gonna keep the interest rate high until inflation has really come down. And there's kind of the popular narrative is that they actually triggered a really big recession as they kind of fought to bring down the rate of inflation. This was kind of one of the episodes that happened where, you know, sure, other things were going on and you know, there are some details here as well, but it really, really looks like what happened in this case was the Fed jacked up the interest rates. So they did the opposite of what we were talking about before where they stimulated demand. They kind of crushed demand. And the unemployment rate went way up as kind of some evidence that the monetary policy can have these kind of real effects on the labor market. And then I just want to leave you with one small piece. It's actually something I've been kind of studying a little bit in my own work, where we look at a similar case, well, not similar, actually, a case study in Sweden, where we also make the argument that the central bank did something really big. And it had kind of big effects on the labor market. And so, you know, in the Sweden, their central bank, we have the Federal Reserve, they have something called the Riksbank, but they do something very similar to the Federal Reserve Bank. And in 2010, what they did was they embarked on this kind of steep monetary tightening. So they increased the interest rate quite a bit. we make an argument in the paper that this was kind of unrelated. They did this basically as a political move. And it was not, it was kind of unrelated to the underlying state of the economy. And therefore, maybe we can use this to study kind of what happens when you just kind of change, you just change the interest rate, kind of unrelated to the fundamental state of the economy. And what we find there is that monetary policy actually seems to have really had really quite large effects on the unemployment rate. So this is saying at this point zero in this chart, the central bank jacked up the interest rate. And then this is saying that basically 2 and 3 years later, the unemployment rate was almost 2 percentage points higher than it would have been if the Fed, if the Riksbank had never changed their interest rate, kind of suggesting again that there were kind of these large effects on the labor market. Everything I've been talking about to you is about the aggregate. So it says unemployment rate. It says nothing about who's employed. Who is having trouble finding a job, that could be really, really important. And it's important potentially for both in terms of welfare, you know, we really care about inequality in kind of who is benefiting as the economy grows overall. And it also might matter because there are some kind of interesting mechanisms for thinking about it. It could actually matter in the aggregate. So we kind of, the whole economy does better when there's kind of less inequality and when we all kind of benefit from these policies. And so what I'm showing you here was that at least in the case of Sweden, it looks like there was actually, it was actually very uneven in who kind of was hurt by this increase in the interest rate. And what I'm showing here, these are the earnings deciles of workers in Sweden over this time period. So if you're down here, you're one of the lower income workers. And if you're up here, you're the highest income worker. And you can see here that this is the effect of the monetary policy on your employment. And it was here at the kind of lower part of the earnings distribution that were most of the workers who lost their jobs. As opposed to the ones who, the kind of higher educated, higher income workers at the top. And so that might be another thing that we need to start thinking about as well, is kind of not just what's the aggregate number, what's unemployment, but kind of who is having trouble finding jobs and how do we think about that? Just to recap, so monetary policy is kind of a key tool that we have to stabilize the economy. We do so potentially in many ways, but kind of the main way is that we control, the central bank controls the short-term interest rate. And my read is that kind of the balance of the evidence suggests that monetary policy can be quite a powerful tool. And it, I think much of the evidence is that it was kind of critical to the health of the economy in the last two recessions. And so I'll leave you there to say, I think the questions facing macroeconomists in the context of monetary policy, but also kind of the tangential related topics as well, are really big and they're still evolving. There are places where previously we haven't had as much ability to kind of use our interesting, you know, tons of data and kind of interesting methods to answer these questions. And so I think it's a really exciting place for kind of new research and study.
You've been listening to Christina Patterson of the Booth School of Business and a faculty research fellow at the National Bureau of Economic Research. Thank you for joining us for today's Extra Slice of the Pie. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The Pie is a production of the University of Chicago's Becker Friedman Institute. Our theme and original music is produced by Story Mechanics. We'll see you next time.